Oh, you brave soul. You're braver than usual this week, and you don't even know it yet. This is not Tryhards, at least not as you would expect it. This is the younger, less focused, less determined, less career-oriented brother of Tryhards. Yes, Byhards. I'm Sean. He's Matt. Brian is away. This is part of the toll of being an adult after taking a Tryhards weekend at GP Minneapolis. Family duties, work duties. It was everything we could do to make that weekend happen. We loved every minute of it, but Brian got swept up in the rest of life this week. So Matt and I get a chance to break down Pro Tour 25, everything that happened there, and whatever else we feel like talking about tonight. Unedited, free-flowing. You might want to strap on your ear condoms because you never know what's going to come out of our mouths as we go through it this evening. You were late for the cast because you were making a drink. What did you go get?
I just had myself a bourbon. We went I had the nice 4-day vacation from Minneapolis. Yeah, it would have been 4-day. And then I came back to work 2 days. My plane didn't land until – I didn't get home until 4:30 in the morning on Monday. Or I'm sorry, on Tuesday morning. And I was supposed to work the next day. Had a meeting that luckily got canceled by dumb luck. And then I worked Wednesday or Tuesday and Wednesday, then had Thursday, Friday off because I was supposed to go to Gen Con, which everyone canceled because my friends suck. And the friends that are listening to this, yes, you do suck. So we went to a bourbon distillery over the weekend. Both of us had 4 days off, just kind of hung out, did lots of stuff we didn't have a chance to do previously. And I went to Buffalo Trace and I got me a nice large bottle of Blanton's. And so I'm drinking a little bit of Blanton's tonight, and it is delicious.
That's a great way to rally after you have a tough week like you did. Have that four-day weekend, go to a couple of distilleries, and make fun of your friends. Hopefully we won't spend too much of the cast tonight making fun of Brian for being gone. Occasionally, sure, but hopefully it's not a repeating theme. I was down in St. Louis over the weekend. The girl was finishing up a new certification. She's a physical therapist, and she was, if you're into this, getting a lymphedema certification, which is kind of a big thing in the industry. So she had a 9-day course that just wore her out. I went down there on the last day to pick her up. We went out. She said, let's go out and party and everything. And we walked down to a brewery that we, the Tryhards, had been at last time we were in St. Louis at the Legacy Showdown at Moonbase Market. We were at the Urban Chestnut down by the Central West End. The Grove entrance is right there, too, if you're familiar with that little patch of St. Louis. And we get our food and we have a beer, and I look across the bench and there she is, like falling asleep in the appetizer. So that was it. She had worn out from that 9-day course. So took her back, put her to bed, watched the Cardinal game, but did grab some beer to bring back. So I've got the Sleepa, the St. Louis IPA from Urban Chestnut for the show tonight. It is delicious.
Oh, Lauren was so mad about you guys going to Urban Chestnut.
Hey, it's a great place. I think we need to get to the one downtown. I love their beer garden that they have there. We got to do that next time we're there. So hopefully you've got something delicious for this episode of Byhards here this evening. Of course, Pro Tour 25 is going to dominate the talk this evening. Matt, how much did you get to watch? We've got to unpack this in so many different ways. It was the richest Magic weekend in history. But you had a team tournament to showcase the history of Magic, Standard, Modern, Legacy all being played. And then you have the controversial Silver Showcase. What I was glad to see from the weekend is, for the most part, and I'm not going to make a blanket statement here, but for the most part, people seemed to enjoy the history of the game and the spectacle and left the hurt feelings, the complaints, and the valid criticisms about how it was set up to the side and just enjoyed this weekend.
The whole spectacle was, I didn't get to watch a ton of it, of either event. And they just had it on. They had the Silver Showcase on in such oddball hours that I was like, okay, what's coming up next? And it seems like they just kind of like threw it in, or whenever they had like free time, they would just throw the Silver Showcase stuff in there.
Now, it was more planned than that. They did the draft on Thursday night, which was a bit odd because then they didn't even play a round, and they did the quarterfinals Friday night.
But I mean, it was so fragmented.
It was. They did the semis on Saturday, and then they came back Sunday morning and did the finals before the top four, which you're not going to do it afterward. So I can appreciate that. But that was just, it was a really weird format.
Yeah, I was, yeah, That's all I got to say. It was just, yeah. It was odd. It was very difficult. And this is what I had complained about. It was very difficult for people who did not understand or don't understand the game that, they're like, what's going on? How do you attack in with this, I don't know, Mog Flunky or whatever the case may be. What's this Mind Twist card? Even though that's literally not legal in any format ever. So I don't know. I mean, it was just it was cool to see as an enfranchised Magic player, but the entire Pro Tour was awesome to watch, but it was not the numbers that they should have been hitting for M25. Somebody made the comment, oh look, they just gave away $150,000 to non-Magic people to get SCG open numbers from a normal open. So, take what you can get from that. But yeah, I mean, the Silver Showcase was the only bad part of it. The good part was it was a blast to watch all of the different, formats being played. And they did a hell of a job on when I could watch it from switching between formats. And it seemed like they only had a little bit of downtime.
Yeah, and the downtime really I thought was minimal. And you get that because it was a relatively limited field of just what seemed like a handful of teams there for the Pro Tour. But in the end, it was taken down by quite the force of it. And you're talking about the teams that made the top four here. You had, Marcio Carvalho with Howie Rio Latin. He had Thiago Saporito with him and Carlos Romão. These are just going to read like Hall of Fame lists. Wu Hull and Orange, the greatest nickname in Magic, the Citrus Assassin, by the way, for Gregory Orange. Ben Hull playing with them. And then you had Gregor Kristoff and Vanderpelt. Those were the, quote, relative unknowns. And that's just the North American market. Those are powerful players on the European scene there as well. But the team that I wanted to talk about, and the first deck I want to talk about, belongs to the team of Channel Fireball. That was Josh Utter Layton's blue-black shadow deck in Legacy. Shadow, for a long time, just sat gathering dust in the bulk rare box. It had its breakout in Modern, became a real weapon after Tamer was kind of played with as the Grixis shadow deck we now know as a Tier 1 menace in Modern. Some developers are starting to toy with this in Legacy. You get all the same cards you have in Modern to reduce your life total and make Shadow a threat early, but you also get the free spells that you don't get in Modern. You get Daze, you get Force of Will, you get those tools to protect yourself, and of course you get Brainstorm and you just up your cantrip game from what they allow in Modern as well. The interesting thing to me on this one, Matt, is that the testing that I've done against it, because there is a player in my playgroup who has been testing this in Legacy, but it is strictly a Legacy port of the Modern deck with Daze added as well as Force of Will and Brainstorm. This, though, is more of a value approach that Josh Utter Layton took. Death Shadow, Delver of Secrets, Gurmag Angler as his threats, but then he spiced in two reanimates in order to take advantage of possible threats from his opponent's graveyard or to reanimate his Death Shadows that were killed. Now, one of the dangers you have in Legacy that you don't have in Modern, if you have two Death Shadows in play and your opponent Swords to Plowshares one, it automatically kills the other one because that's how math works. So you get the other one back, I guess, with Reanimate, and Utter Layton made good use of it throughout the tournament, he said. But I thought that was interesting, looking at the usual suspects in Brainstorm, Daze, Force of Will, Fatal Push, Stubborn Denial, and Snuff Out coming off the bench, a free spell, if you consider the payment of four life to be free, non-mana costed. And then some more search in the sorcery spot, but those two reanimates kind of peppered in there as well. I had no idea that it was going to go this way when we saw Death Shadow and Legacy for the first time, nor did I think it was going to have this gangbusters of a debut.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if it performed well because it's a good deck, or if it performed well because of card availability. I mean, I'm not going to pretend to know that. There was a breakdown somewhere of how much was converted as far as the cards or the formats. So, which format won each one. I do think that a big chunk of this was preying upon Death and Taxes and preying upon the Eldrazi aggro, which are going to be your two most common decks because of large tournament card availability. I obviously, you know, all these pros can just borrow cards, but testing is going to be a little more difficult on that. I don't know. I mean, I really do like those stuff outs. You know, you mentioned that. That's really cool. The one, and Sean, you can definitely comment on this. How did you like the Throne of Geth?
I love Throne of Geth. Whenever I play around in Modern, and Modern is the format that I like to just brew wacky decks in, whenever I do something aggressive and try to go wide, I love Throne of Geth. I hate seeing it when I'm playing Control on the other side, because it's just essentially double your damage that you did that turn by doing what you want to do as an aggressive deck, which is attack and turn your stuff sideways.
This one, the Throne of Geth, I'm talking about the one that proliferates, that you sack an artifact and proliferates.
That's not Throne of Geth, is it?
Yes,
I'm,
it is.
I'm thinking, yeah, Throne of the God Pharaoh. My bad. Yeah, I threw you for a loop there, yeah, for a second. Throne of Geth
was in the sideboard,
yes,
because they were afraid of all the Eldrazi aggro, so you could actually proliferate their Chalice of the Voids to make it two.
Mm-hmm.
And then they it would encounter, you know, whatever it was, 50% of their deck.
Oh, 75% of the deck, I think.
It's like
what they were really
ridiculous.
Afraid of. All right, I threw you for a loop there. I'm sorry. I was thinking Throne of the God Pharaoh, not Throne of Geth. So to take all those thoughts that I had and just apply them to your wacky brews with Throne of the God Pharaoh. Throne of Geth is an interesting card because, one, it's colorless, so you could really use it whenever you need it. There's no mana restriction on it, and it does play around the edges that you're not expecting. If I'm a Chalice deck and I get it down on one, I'm never seeing this coming in a million years.
Oh, no, and I think that this is one of those... It shocks me for the pros to play, to be so sure that a single deck is going to be so proliferate the format so much that they're playing freaking Throne of Geth. That's such a narrow sideboard card.
By the way, ba-dum-cha, it was going to be so proliferated. I saw what you did there.
I know.
That is a by-hards level joke. So you did it in the appropriate environment.
But I mean, I saw it and I'm like, I scratched my head and I was like, huh. And yeah, that's all I got to say. But yeah, I mean, it was on the legacy side, it was all Death and Taxes, Death Shadow, Reanimator. And I think there was one Miracles in top 16 and one Blue-White Control, two Blue-White Controls, I'm sorry, that were like just straight Blue-White Controls as opposed to... you know, the style, or, you know, these were the Mentor Snapcaster or Blue Eye Controls. There was one of those and then a couple Miracles. It's cool. It was a cool tournament. It's a team tournament. So I don't want people to run out and say,
yes,
hey,
very difficult to data mine. Yeah. In those team tournaments. But because it was a team tournament, the deck that you've been hot to talk about actually peaked up in Modern.
Yeah. I'd be a terrible person if I didn't mention that this was all because of the game podcast, but the black red Vengevine deck, I should have got my Vengevines when I was in Minneapolis, because I really enjoyed watching this deck. I just didn't know which way it was going to go, because people were playing with bridges, they were playing, you know, the Bloodghast, they're doing a lot of stuff, and now of course Vengevines are, you know, what, $50-$65 in paper, and I have my bridges, but this deck looks really sweet. The only reason I did not play this deck was because, or I didn't build this deck, was because I feel like people are just going to go towards white, and then as soon as you get your graveyard hate out, then the deck just dies. Now, I could be wrong about that. But I feel like this just dies the graveyard hate, and this is going to be kind of like Reanimator, where it's going to cycle in, cycle out of the formats. I don't know, Sean, what do you think? Do you think this is just graveyard? I mean, just dies the graveyard hate?
I don't think it just dies the graveyard hate because of two of the enablers that they were using to set up those quick Vengevines. This was the inspired genius, in my mind, was the combination of Hangerback Walker and Walking Ballista. The fact that you can play them for zero to satisfy Vengevine's requirement that you play a creature that turn to get the Vengevine out as early and as often and as combo heavy, meaning if you put two Vengevines in, you can get those back and start cracking in for eight right away, as well as if the game goes long, Hangerback Walker and Walking Ballista are two great cards to have when you get into a grindy board stall kind of game. So that's the addition that I thought was inspired and that most intrigues me. Now, if you're going to be running up against Graveyard Hate, Rest in Peace being the big one, maybe some Leyline of the Void, you're going to have to consider whether or not you need to jam some green mana in there, because the Vengevines themselves are just uncastable. They're triggers only, the way that deck is set up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure you can stretch. You probably could stretch the mana. You could probably throw in one red green land, or, well, no, you'd need two. I don't know. The double green kind of kills it.
Now, is this deck in your mind just the latest mad scientist brew to pop up, or is this another way to take advantage of what's being called now the best card in Modern, which is Faithless Looting? They talked about this during the Pro Tour this weekend, and a number of people at the news desk say that they would now put Faithless Looting ahead of things like Thoughtseize in the format as the best card in the format. And this deck, I think, is a more explosive way to use Faithless Looting than even Mardu Pyromancer, which is set up to be more of a grindy deck.
So Faithless Looting, obviously amazing card, but I think what popped this up is Stitcher Supplier. I mean, Stitcher Supplier is that card that looks very unassuming, but the minute that, like, Jerry T started talking about it, I'm like, and it piqued my interest. I was in the Discord chat, you know, kind of reading about this deck, and there was the basically the guy who helped develop this deck was running that, and Stitcher Supplier, I think, is going to start making a lot more strange decks, because for one mana, you're not getting the card draw of Faithless Looting, but you're getting the mill, and then if you sack it out, if you have a sack outlet, I've even seen this pop up in Legacy with sack and do a damage to something.
Oh, the Zombardment deck?
Yeah, Goblin Bombardment. I've seen that pop up even within Legacy. So I think that's the unassuming uncommon. I think that's the card that really just kind of pushed this bad boy over the edge. But yeah, you're right. Being able to Walking Ballista or Hangerback Walker for zero, being able to sacrifice it out, Insolent Neonate. There's lots of ways to trigger it. But I think once Leyline of the Void becomes more popular, you're just kind of you're a little bit SOL for the most part. I mean, unless you're just attacking in for one and, you know, they run out, or you're greater Gargadoning, with a 9/7 and just hope they don't have removal.
Yeah, that was a blast from the past, seeing greater Gargadon on the battlefield again this weekend. Stitcher Supplier, to me, this picks up the mantle of the unassuming common that may change formats. We saw this with Delver of Secrets, and is Stitcher Supplier going to be the next common that starts to change the face of Eternal formats? That's a pretty high bar to live up to.
I think it's going to, I don't think it's going to change the face of these formats, but I definitely think it's going to alter the formats. I mean, why are these decks not popping up more in Legacy, you know, like these Zombardment decks or something like that? So I do think that there's something out there. I mean, especially with Stitcher Supplier.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where that goes and to see if it pops up. It's not a surgical way to get creatures into the graveyard, which is usually what Reanimator wants. It's more of a brute force way to do it, which is usually what Dredge is looking for. So I would assume, I don't play Dredge in any format, but I would assume, Matt, that this is a card Dredge has to be taking a very close look at, even though their list is pretty tight.
Yeah, I almost think their list is too tight to be running this card. I could be wrong on it, but the list is pretty damn tight for Dredge. Now, maybe we start to see, even though it would betray its namesake, we start to see Manaless Dredge run it and run like four fetches. And then you essentially go, instead of just going over to the 1/1 that comes back from the graveyard or whatever he is, the 2/2, the Nether Spirit, I think it is.
Yeah, he's 2/2/1.
Instead of running stuff like that, you're running like your Bloodgast and your Landfalls, so that you can you know, essentially like turn one with Stitcher Supplier, you can start that combo off turn one.
Yeah, we'll see where this goes. I think Stitcher Supplier, there's going to be some brewing around that card for quite some time. By the way, lest I buried the lead on this, congrats to Hot Sauce Games as they took it all down at PT25 with Wu, Hull, and Orange in the finals. So what drama we had right there at the end with Utter Leighton, Stark, and Yuza. If they had taken down the tournament, they would have knocked the fantastic team that features the Peach Garden Oath, Johnny Magic, Kunio. They would have knocked them from the chance to play for the title by taking it all down. As it sits, though, even though they didn't have the great weekend many were expecting them to, you'll get those guys. I think is that I can't remember all the teams now that they've jumped around quite a bit, but I think somebody's going to know who that is, but I know who's on it. That's the important part. Remember
what,
the sponsorship?
You talking about the Finkel?
Yeah, team? Finkel and the Peach Garden Oath and Andrew Cuneo right and now. All those guys. That team, they're going to have their
Ultimate
chance.
Guard.
Okay, that's what I thought. Ultimate Guard. Yeah. They're still going to have a chance to play for that title, the team title, coming up later this year. Very cool stuff from this weekend. Did you get a little bit sick of it where it was kind of forced down our gullet on the broadcast? This is the $1 million Magic weekend. Matt, did you know that Pro Tour 25 was the $1 million Magic weekend? $1 million.
$150,000 of it was pissed away. But you know what? Good for them. Shove it down our throats. I don't care. But then I think also they also did a piss poor job of explaining the teams. You know what? When a title would pop up, you know, or to say, okay, yeah, if they knock this team out, then they're not in the team running. But they never really explained what happens. You know what this means for the teams.
Yeah, what the process
what they
is.
Plan,
yeah,
what the incentive is. They never did that, and they never really they talked about some of the old school. They had that new. They're having a new Enter the Battlefield come out, and they talked about like the old school, some of the old school players that were here, which was cool, but they did not talk about them enough. They didn't talk about this incentive for these teams either. So I think that part of it, you really have to follow the team standings. And even I am like, I'm lost a little bit on like which one's which, you know, as far as, hey, these are, you know, there's no team identities, I guess is the best way, or it's not being communicated from Wizards. I think it's the latter versus the former.
Yeah, I think there's some of that too, because while you can find the individual top 25 rankings really easily, you'd usually have to use your powers of internet search and find to go find what's going on with the team series. And I'd like to see that if Wizards is going to stick with it, which I think they are, I'd like to see that a lot more readily available and publicized where that goes, which leads me to my only big boo for the weekend. And it had to do with the Silver Showcase, but not the players, not the Magic. It had to do with how they covered it. Did you notice this, Matt? Every time that they put up the card viewer during the Silver Showcase, they put up a more recent version of the card than was actually being played.
Yeah, and that's because of the way that Gatherer puts all the cards together.
But you have to be ready for that. You have to be ready for that because that looks ridiculous in my mind.
It does. And sometimes I think they caught it early. But there was even sometimes where they would show the like masterpieces. Did you notice that?
Yep, because again, when you default to your linked card on Gatherer, that's the one it brings up.
Yeah, and so I don't think Ornithopter came up. I think Ornithopter Ornithopter comes up as the Aether Revolt one.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. Yeah, I'm like, but like if you showed the Ornithopter from, and I think that was one they showed, was from the Masterpiece series, it looks totally different, and the border looks totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I wasn't a fan, say the least.
Well, where do we go from here, I guess, is the question. We're getting deep into August. This weekend is GP Orlando, which is standard. That's coming up for, well, I mean, what is today? Today's the 6th. I should know that. It was my sister's birthday yesterday. This coming weekend, GP Orlando is standard, and GP Brussels also standard. So it's going to go from the team focus back to standard. Standard, Matt, we haven't seen that in a minute. and we didn't see much of it on coverage this weekend. I'm wondering if that was by design or if they simply used the springboard of the 25th anniversary of Magic to feature as much Eternal play as they did. And I'm not going to complain that they were featuring a lot of Legacy. I thought it was fantastic. The play was tight. The decks were interesting. But now this standard format that isn't quite ready for rotation yet is going to be front and center the next couple of weeks. I'm kind of wondering if there's just going to be a big shrug.
So I saw somebody joke about this, about exactly what you're saying. Oh, there's a lot of Modern and Legacy be shown. And somebody responded, and I would say it was 97% jest and 3% seriousness of, yeah, that's because they don't want to showcase Nexus of Fate, the huge mistake of a card.
Well, the huge mistake of how they packaged the card.
Yes.
The card as a mechanical Magic card is fine.
Yes.
Didn't that jump up to like over $40 over the weekend?
Well, I will be, I actually talked to Brian on Saturday and I said, Brian, I owe you some money because he was selling some Nexus of Fates at GP Minneapolis. I'm like, oh, I'll buy those. I'm like, you know, they'll be worth money at some point. And I think buy list on them was $10 or something like that at the time. I sold three of them. I got two from him. I sold three of them today, and I sold them for $38 apiece.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm like, so that's how high they jumped. Mm-hmm. Now they're dropping like a rock, but I'm just like, come on, people. Like, that's all I got to say. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, to me, this is the equivalent of our friend who we both know going to an all meat buffet and overeating and then getting the meat sweats afterwards. Like everybody had like the Nexus of Fate sweats where they just had to get them all right now, because something might be happening. And I guess that's how speculation works. You know, a lot of players, it's Magic's version of FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. Somebody debut a piece of tech and we have to have everything right this effing second all the time. You know, that one of the things I love about Legacy so much is the format actually has time to gestate. You don't get that in Standard. You barely get it in Modern. So you have times, okay, take a look at this. What's going on? And I understand that it's better for Wizards to have things that change on a dime because you need players constantly chasing cardboard. And that's, you know, how they're selling packs and doing things like that. They're helping the secondary market as well, which they need to keep alive to help the game continue to exist and continue to grow. So I understand why it works in that format or why you have that sort of knee-jerkish reaction. But at the same time, I just look at this and go, just take a breath. You know, there are other decks to play and other, not just other, you know, tier two, tier three, other absolutely solid tier one decks.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, this card is powerful. I think, unfortunately, I think they're going to have to kind of jump back and say, all right, what are we doing here? Like, well, we got to figure something out here.
That's where I was going to go with this. Now, because this happened with Nexus of Fate, is everything from now on that's the buy a box promo going to be like a 12-mana 3-3 with one irrelevant ability? Like, it has to be so far from playable that they can never be accused of shorting the market again.
I don't think so. But I think they're going to overreact, you know, like they do every single time. They're going to probably overreact and say, due to nonsense, you know, insert excuse here, we're no longer going to offer the buy box promos, even though they did their job. They drove a lot of traffic to the LGSs to buy boxes. Now, the new price increase that's coming down, maybe, you know, I think they have to do that. Drive traffic to the LGSs. But unfortunately, I think you might be right where they either cut them or they're going to make them like, you know, a 12 mana 3-3 vanilla, some nonsense like that. And it's going to swing, the pendulum's going to swing back. But maybe, and I'm being really hopeful here, maybe they're going to say, hey, we were prepared for this eventuality that this might happen. So moving forward for the month of August or September, the F&M promo is going to be Nexus of Fate with a different art or something like that. Now, that'll lead to a little disgust from players if they did something like that, but they'd have to have another outlet to say to release these cards. and say, hey, you know what? Sorry, we screwed up type of thing.
You just blew my mind by saying it's Nexus of Fate, but with different art. That means they had pre-planned, pre-ordered the art, and pre-printed this based on this eventuality. That's a level of foresight that I don't think their track record has earned them.
Oh, I don't think so either. I'm being optimistic.
Hey, man, very optimistic. You want to drive players to LGSs? Start giving out Nexus of Fate as your FNM promo. I think right. People would probably come out for that.
I think so. And I'm still, you know, their FNM promo program, they still need some work on it. You know, it was doing fine before. Yeah, it was a little much to give out, you know, Emrakul's back in the day. But maybe they'll come out this week and they have some planning for this. I think it's a little bit, I think we're being a little bit, you know, it's not a broken card. I don't think, unless after rotation it comes in that it's going to be like in every single deck. I mean, then you're talking it's a $100 card, but I don't think it might stick about $20. You know, let's be honest, like maybe it'll stick about $20. Maybe they'll have another, run and say, okay, hey, all we have the buy a box promo moving forward, and here it is. And so maybe they send out another shipment to the LGSs. That could be another thing. But again, that would require some foresight that I am cautiously optimistic that they have.
I want to cycle back to something you just said. Maybe that they went too far giving out Emrakul back in the day. What would Emrakul's price tag be right now if it hadn't been so widely distributed as the premier hook card of the set? Because it's got a bunch of different versions.
So previously to the, what was that? The, was that Modern Masters 15? I think it was.
Whatever. I'll give you credit for whatever one it is.
Previously to that, I think it would have been $100 card, an easy $100 card. I think it was what at its high was what, like 40, 50?
I want to say 40.
Okay. I think it would have been an easy $100 card. I don't think it'd be that but big of a difference after the fact far as, you know, and what happens after the, after they actually take it and they reprinted it, I think it would have been just fine then.
All right. That's interesting. Yeah. The way some of those things have panned out. And, you often talk about price suppression with things being, handouts or that sort of thing and the market being saturated, but Emrakul, the original, the Aeon's Torn. Was one of those, and yet it still achieved a $40+ price tag, you know, along the way. Now, granted, that was some years after Zendikar came out. And as we were talking about, just to cycle back to the beginning of the show, if you showed the Silver Showcase to people who hadn't played Magic and said, this is our game, and then took them to play the current set, there would be a disjointed understanding of what that was. But you have to be a real enfranchised player to understand on a deep level kind of what was going on there. Because if you've started playing Magic since, I'll say, the original Zendikar came out, since we were just talking about Emrakul, the game as it was showed didn't resemble anything that the, quote, modern era Magic player has played with. So I thought it was great. And then on, I think it was Sunday, they actually used the video of the beta draft from Gen Con and showed it just to show some of the cool cards that were open. They opened a lot more dual lands. There was some power that was opened in that. That wasn't the case at Pro Tour 25. But I thought that was interesting because you have to know that your audience is the enfranchised player if you think that video is compelling watching.
I mean, who's the enfranchised player? And after this rant, I'm going to get off this. But
if you want me to play devil's advocate, I'll put my hand up. I would call myself an enfranchised player.
Here's my question to you. Who's the enfranchised player that knows about these old sets and everything, but doesn't already know about watching Magic on Twitch? Yeah, exactly. The fact that you have to think about that.
My dad has no idea. First of all, doesn't even know how to get the podcast. Secondly, thinks Twitch is something that he has to go to the doctor for. But he was the one who introduced myself and Brian to the game via his swag bag when he was a guest at WizardCon in Chicago way back in the early 90s. And after we learned how to play it, he thought it was cool. So I taught him how to play and we played together. But you want to talk about the ultra casual, you know, that was the equivalent of dad playing catch in the backyard, you know, with his son kind of thing. He was never into it for his own sake. I think he did it because it was something that we could do together. But he has no interest on a day-to-day, week-to-week, or even month-to-month basis going forward. So you can't call him enfranchised because he has no skin in the game. I'd like to talk to somebody from his generation that is still more active in the game, and that is, and I'm going to throw his name out here because this just came up without sort of asking him first, but Larry Wyman is a guy, yep. Older guy, and you see him at a lot of events. He loves it. He's of my dad's generation. When Larry owned Way Out Comics in St. Charles around the St. Louis area, it was the same era in which we owned Comics and More in Kirkwood. So Larry finished his career, retired, loves playing Magic. And so I would love to talk to him about that because he's the definition of enfranchised when it comes to cards and knowledge. But does he seek it out in its digital form to like watch on Twitch? But is that a growing market for Wizards? The 60-plus crowd of retirees who has beta dual lands can travel to GPs. You know, do they need to be watching it on Twitch?
Well, and besides that is, so the purpose of stuff like this is a marketing ploy. I mean, let's be honest. That's what
that
is.
And you're going back to the Silver Showcase. This was in entirely a marketing ploy. Yes, you're correct.
Yeah, so it was a marketing ploy. So the big question there is, it's a marketing ploy, but when you try to market, you're trying to capture a market you don't currently have, and you're trying to maintain the market you do have. So did this do any of it? And I don't think it did any of that. So that's my last rant on that because it's just such nonsense. And the beta draft, so I was super salty all weekend. I was salty mad all weekend because
even when you were buying your new fly fishing rod?
I haven't bought it yet, but I'm going to. they actually have a sale coming up. But I was salty, Matt, because when I actually was doing the vacation stuff, we were supposed to, like I mentioned earlier, we were supposed to go to Gen Con, and everyone kind of canceled. So I got to see everyone that was at Gen Con posting on Twitter and Facebook and saying, hey, I did this. Do you know the beta draft qualifier on Saturday was 7 rounds cut to top 8 of a sealed deck? Whatever it is, M20 or M19 sealed deck.
Yes.
That seems like a lot of work. Like, wow. That's all I got to say is wow.
Yeah. Well, how else do you want people to qualify? It would feel weird to qualify for that via a constructed format, wouldn't it?
Well, okay, I agree with that, but what about doing a four round qualifier, and then everybody who wins that qualifier plays in a larger tournament? Because a lot of the guys I saw, they're like, oh, I'm going to do this. Then they get there, they find out 7 rounds, it lasts 11 and a half hours. And you paid, it was $120, I think, for the weekend. So you ate up, it was a $50 entry fee plus your Gen Con entry, and it ate up a whole day at Gen Con. I mean, I'm not saying that's not okay, but I'm just saying like a lot of people were like, wow, I really don't want to play in this anymore. And they were actually, from what I understand, struggling to give out refunds because of that. And I frankly don't blame people who are like, you know, why not do a 4-round qualifier? Then all those people come back on like Sunday, Saturday, you know, whenever it was, do the winter qualifiers. And then so people could say, oh, yeah, you know what? I'm going to play in this, or no, I'm not. And that you're going to naturally weed out people. It blows my mind because it feels like they weren't prepared for the numbers that they had as far as, oh, we didn't expect it to take this long. And you're doing a beta draft for enfranchised Magic players. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I think my favorite meme from the weekend, both at the Pro Tour and at Gen Con, was the clip from the Indiana Jones movie where he's telling the guy on the boat, that belongs in a museum. And people are just saying that about the beta cars being open. And what was cool that they did it at the Pro Tour as well was watching him go through antiquities and Arabian Nights and those kinds of things. BDM, I thought, was going to lose his mind when there was a Scheherazade on the table and somebody was forced to take it. I think a beta land, or I think a basic land, they were betas, obviously, was taken before Scheherazade. That's how little you would want to play it in that format. But yeah, there was a lot of cool moments for people who remember some of those things. And if you're just looking for excitement and marketing, did it work out? I'm sure Wizards will share all their internal numbers with us to prove themselves right. Oh, yeah,
of course. Immediately they will.
at any point, they're welcome to do so. That was the big news for over the weekend. Pro Tour 25. It was a lot of fun to watch. If you got down to Gen Con, write us. Tell us what that scene was like as well. Because while it was a cool event, it is not the focus, obviously, of Gen Con. And it was overshadowed this weekend by Pro Tour 25. Matt, we're not going to do an official in the elevator this week since this is buy-hards and not try-hards. But is there a card you got your eye on? We were already talking a little bit about you missing out on your Vengevines. Is there anything else from that deck or anything else that people need to be aware of this week in Magic?
So there's actually a couple of these.
I'm going to let you get away with this since it's just by heart. You can have a couple.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to do it anyways. How do you spell Stitcher? Oh, there it is. I was going to say Stitcher Supplier. That's actually one I think you're going to see in like the foils. The foils are like $10, but I actually think that's one you're going to see in like random like boxes. You know, that's going to be an uncommon that people aren't going to realize is worth $10. And actually it's up to 20.
The foil, you're saying the foil.
Yeah, the foils. Yeah.
Okay. Regular Stitcher suppliers were $20. I'm just rich. Right now. Oh, I'm rich. Cardboard rich.
As far as the Vengevine deck though, I think the card you really want to be looking for is probably Bridge from Below, because I think that's a little bit more difficult to print versus the Vengevine, because I think your Vengevines, it wouldn't surprise me to see Vengevine in any of these standard sets, because I don't think it's too powerful for standard, and it's kind of overdue for a real reprint. I mean, it had an RPTQ promo or something like that. But I do think it's time for another reprint. But Bridge from Below is just a worthless card. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, you open up a Bridge from Below rare in like draft or something, it's just completely worthless. It's only in one archetype. It's difficult to reprint, and not have like, you know, fuel bads basically. So I think that's the one I want to keep an eye out, is like Bridge from Below, because I do think that with Stitcher Supplier coming out, we're going to start to see more Bridge from Below's or Bridge from Below decks, I should say.
Is that good or bad for Magic? More Bridge from Below decks?
I don't know. I think if you have the Bridge from Below decks, I think you also have to have a reprint of the Leyline of the Void, because that card's starting to get a little bit pricey as well.
Foils on that are like a C note, aren't they? They're like a Benjamin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're pretty pricey. Ooh. I mean, even the normals are, it's been printed twice. I think it's the only Leyline that's been printed twice. There might be one more, but even the normals are $30+. I mean, the foils you can pick up for,
oh, wait like a minute. I thought they were all printed twice. I thought they were in Guild Pact and then in like Magic 11 or 12 or one of those. I thought they were all printed twice.
Sanctity. Okay. So they were printed twice later, because Sanctity was put into, was only in 2011, because they weren't in Guild. It wasn't in Guild Pact.
Okay. All
so right. There's a few of them that weren't in Guild Pact that were added after the fact. And I mean, really the only ones that matter are Sanctity and the Void. Can you think of another ley line? I guess Singularity.
Well, it depends on if you play ley lines, the deck.
That's true. I don't think Singularity was only in Guild Pact too, so it was really hit and miss on where they were printed.
The only one that I thought might matter at some point was anticipation, simply because if you open with it in your hand, no matter what deck you're playing, you essentially get to play fairies for the entire game, meaning that you get to play entirely at instant speed. And I thought that would be
important. You know how
important.
Much that bad boy is?
How much?
$12 to $15.
That's not bad. That's not bad. I've still got some sitting around that I used to use in EDH. So
it's just in, that's another one that's only in 2011.
Yeah. But no, as far as you saying another ley line breaking out other than Void and Sanctity, I always thought if a third one did, that it would be anticipation simply because it was one card that can change the entire pacing, the entire texture of a matchup by allowing you to suddenly just play fairies with whatever deck you're playing.
Honestly, I think that could be a breakout card if they printed a Force of Will style card within Modern.
In Modern?
Now, I'm not saying it have to be Force of Will. Don't get me wrong.
But you're saying is something you don't have to pay mana for to use as a counter spell.
Yeah, like you can pitch it to, or, you know, like something like the, what was the red card that they banned? Because the infect would win turn one.
Yeah, that was Blazing Shoal.
Yeah, something like Blazing Shoal, Force of Will, something along those lines. Yeah, even Foil. I mean, hell, Foil could even be.
Well, you've got Disrupting Shoal.
Yeah.
And that's not great. Nobody really plays around with that.
But something like that. I mean, right. I think it. Because I love the idea of Leyline of Anticipation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love that idea, but it's just. It's those hands where you either don't have it in your first hand, and it's just a worthless card, or you have it, and then you have like two of them. You know, it's just a worthless card.
Now that we're onto this tangent, let me ask you about this, because I know that you've played this card, Foil, the card Foil. Is that enough card disadvantage that you can let it loose in Modern? Because it's what? You have to pitch Foil, a blue card, and an island in order to counter the spell, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes.
So you're three for wanting yourself.
Do you pitch them or do you discard it?
Either way. I mean, if you discarded it, it might be a skosh more playable, but you're, as opposed to Force of Will, you're two for wanting yourself. Foil, I believe, if I remember correctly, you have to three for one yourself.
Oh, you discard an island and another card from your hand instead of paying its cost. So you actually discard two cards.
Right. So you three for one yourself.
Yep. I've been a long proponent that Foil should be in Modern, and that should be the test to see if you can run Days and Force of Will within Modern.
See, I think Days would be fine, but I think Force is too good. I think Days would be fine. And if you wanted a super safe free spell, let's say there's a format in which you wanted to give a card a chance, but you didn't want it to be too good. Let's say it was like a buy a box promo. So you could make Foil. Now, I'm just being a jerk here, but that could be your approach to Modern, and try Foil as the quote free spell in the format, the free counter spell, because there's already free spells because they have the Phyrexian mana spells still loose. That was, and I've been on this soapbox before saying that if I had one chance to swing the ban hammer in Modern, it would just be all Phyrexian mana spells would be banned. And Wizards has come out and said, that might have been a little more powerful than we anticipated. So I think they, you know, will they ever do that? I don't know. Is Apostle's Blessing breaking the format? Depends on whether or not Infect just jammed it up your you-know-where. You know, your opinion's going to change, probably.
Yeah, freaking Dismember. Like, what the hell?
Well, Dismember is the fairest, I think, of the Phyrexian mana spells.
Yeah, that's saying a lot.
Yeah, well, it is, but. Yeah, Foil and Modern. That's interesting to me.
I think that should be the test case.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that. Do you think Brian's listening to this and like pulling out his hair right now?
Probably.
You can't have Foil in Modern. You're gonna wreck the format. Just like when they unbanned Jace and Bloodbraid Elf. Killed it.
Right.
Killed. Magic's over.
Dead. Magic's done.
Speaking of done, I think we're getting done. What else? What else is has you hot under the collar this week?
Let's see. What else did we have? We had There's some news. What was the other news? The DQ. That was from the Pro Tour. That was interesting.
And in case you're wondering, this is what Matt sounds like every week. You're just getting to hear him unedited this weekend.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In Byhards. So enjoy what you're not missing every other week.
Yeah. The nonsense, so all the nonsense with the new Commander decks that were out. I mean, that's a couple weeks old, but people are saying these are the worst Commander decks in a long time.
You know, everything's that when Magic comes out, it's always the worst. This is the equivalent of Office Space. Every day you see me is the worst day of my life. Yeah, the famous line from Office Space. So I don't give any credence to that.
Oh no, I don't. I mean, people just need to calm their tits type of thing.
Now I have to put a not safe for work warning.
Sorry. I don't want to hurt any ears doing that.
Uh-huh. Well, it wasn't ears that you just called out.
Sorry. My bad, people. Let's see here. I mean, yeah, there wasn't, outside of the DQ that people were complaining about, there wasn't a whole lot really going on outside of the Pro Tour.
Now, what happened with the DQ? I didn't follow this closely.
So essentially what happened was somebody activated a Aether Vial, Modern. He was playing against humans. Activated an Aether Vial. Mm-hmm. He said, okay, put Meddling Mage into play and named a card. Then he claimed that he never had a chance, that he just put into play and he never had a chance to respond. But this player.
So the player who activated the Aether Vial was the one who got DQ'd?
No. The player who was arguing he never had a chance to respond to the Aether Vial, his opponent. To the activation, got DQ'd because he lied to a judge.
Oh, you're not supposed to do that at the Pro Tour. You're not supposed to do that ever, but you're not supposed to do that at a Pro Tour.
And it kind of came out that even his teammates said, no, he knows damn well how the Aether Vial works and that's not how it works, or that's not what happened. And he was telling the judge one story, and then his teammates were telling the head judge another story.
Well, so I've got two things I want to say here. Number one, you better know how Aether Vial works if you're picked to play on a team at a Pro Tour, especially if you're playing a format where Aether Vial is legal. And number two, when your teammates are like, hey, man, that's not what happened. Why don't you just step back? And all you got to do at that point is say, look, I got a little wound up in the moment. You know, that is what happened. And you know, sorry for trying to tilt that ruling my way. You can still gracefully exit from that situation without being a complete nozzle.
So it says during the investigation, this player argued he thought Meddling Mage's ability was a triggered ability upon entering play. However, after investigation, judges determined he knew that it was not a triggered ability, and his statements to his opponents and his judges were attempts to undo his mistake of not casting Path to Exile in response to the Aether Vial activation. So, in not so many words, he lied to judges about knowing which was a triggered ability and which was an enter the battlefield ability. It is what it is, but so that was one, and then Burton Chidi being back on there, you know, getting bronze was another one.
That, who was the commentator at the news desk this week? Was it Simon Gertsen, who I like, the Czech player? Yes, he was. He showed his disenthusiasm, shall we say, for that happening with the way that he sort of danced around the topic there. And I know that there are several other pros who are, let's just say, not enthused. That he's been given, he being Burton Chidi, has been given this additional opportunity. I can't even say second at this point. Have been given this additional opportunity. You want to talk about things that are sort of pie on the face of Magic. There's a lot of things that the community gets whipped into a hysteria about that are irrelevant. This is not one of them. I think this is one of those times where have to reflect and say, hey, is this good for our game?
Yeah, and I mean, how can somebody get caught blatantly cheating like that. I mean, and that's all it is, blatant cheating, and gets so many chances to redeem himself or herself.
America loves a comeback story, man. But yeah, I don't know if Magic players this love this comeback story. Exactly. Now, it's totally different when I cheat you during playtesting. That's totally different because that's totally different. If you're paying attention.
Oh, no, no, that's just you being a bad player.
Yeah, well, usually.
Oh, no, wait, that's Brian. I'm thinking of Brian being a bad player.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and tell you now that I don't know when Meddling Mage triggers so that I can have it both ways next time we play.
Okay, we have this on tape. Go to the tape.
Hey, speaking of tape, if people want to watch you be a somewhat confident pilot who is then derided by people, mostly me, when you stream, you're going to stream this week, right?
I'm going to stream tomorrow, which is Tuesday. So actually, only the patrons will know this, but I'll shout it out on the on our Twitter feed. Sweet. And I just haven't decided what I want to stream yet. Let's make that decision now.
There is no decision to be made. You know you want to play Vengevine.
I looked at it, and I've actually played it through some practice leagues. So, I mean, I'm fine. I'm fine playing Vengevine. Don't get me wrong.
Are you looking at playing Modern, or you want to play Legacy? What do you want to do?
I don't know. I'm kind of. Do I want to play more Jund? I actually bit the bullet and ordered. I had that store credit come in on Monday, and I bit the bullet and ordered. Vraska's Contempts. And yeah, I ordered those so I could actually play the Jund project. I wouldn't mind. I've got to find the list, but there's a Grixis Ninjas deck hiding out there, but I can't actually play it because it uses that ninja from the new Commanders deck that won't be out. Yeah, I know.
Grixis Ninjas.
The damn thing won't be out on Magic Online till like October because, you know, Wizards doesn't know how to do their own shit.
It's a ninja. You just ninjutsu it into the deck when it attacks, right? You have another creature attack.
I just put proxy on it.
That's a playtest card, no, Matthew. I mean, that's not a proxy. It's a playtest card.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah, that was the other thing. Did you see somebody had actually an official playtest card on the Pro Tour?
No, that would have been cool.
Yeah, like they had because Nexus of Fate is only printed in foil, mm-hmm. So they're actually legally allowed to put in a playtest. They had a playtest card.
Yeah, well, this is the standard version of the. Oh, what's the name of the card in Legacy that shows up once in a blue moon? The Jund guy that they only have the foil of.
Grixis guy. It's a Grixis guy.
Oh, is it Grixis? Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah,
it's not.
Players love those foils. Yeah, foil only copies. All right.
Well, and that's why he was proxying it because he didn't have any other foils in his deck. And you know it was half troll, too. I mean, most of these players have access.
Really,
to foils,
you think so? Really... You think a player showed up at the Pro Tour to troll? I don't know, man.
Oh yeah, yeah. You're skeptical of that, yeah.
I mean, you weren't there, so yeah, I'm skeptical.
I wasn't, but I would troll the shit out of them if I was on the Pro Tour.
And there's the third reason that we're gonna have to put a language warning on this.
Oh,
one.
Damn it!
Just go to town now, man. It's all right, good.
We're gonna put an adult on this.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's gonna be the first try-hards adult.
Sean, let's have this discussion real quick here.
Yeah.
What are you gonna watch? What should we play?
That's why I asked what format you wanted to play. If you want to play standard, you could play the Jund project. Yours is still slightly different than mine. You're a little bit more red heavy. You've got the dismissive pyromancers. If you wanted to try something else, I've been toying with a cute little deck in standard that I call Rock Legends. It is rock, black, white, green, and it plays all legendary creatures in an attempt to abuse board the Weatherlight. And it's been okay. It hasn't been great. It's been okay. You get to play all your planeswalkers. You get to play your legendary creatures. And it's essentially a hyper powered mid range deck. And in the matchups that that's good, it's fantastic. In the matchups that it's bad to be a mid-range deck, yeah, there's not enough there to kind of pull you through on that. But yeah, in Legacy, I would love to run the blue-black deck from Josh Utter Layton from the Pro Tour and just kind of see it in action firsthand and kind of make the decisions to go along with it. But yeah, I mean, whatever you want to run, man.
I don't know. I just wanted, I kind of gave up on my blue-white-green Stoneblade deck. I'm actually thinking.
Wait a minute. You didn't even get the Crushed Velvet Runic Armasaur yet to put on the wall behind you when you played that.
I know. Oh, that's super. I'll put a, I'll figure out how to make my background a Runic Armasaur. And that's what'll be my frame tomorrow night.
You want one more reference from the trip to Minneapolis? Thanks, Obama. That's there you yeah. go. Now we're.
Oh, Jesus. Don't even get me started on that.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, maybe I should finish with the traditional out. Oh, you brave soul hanging out this week for Byhards. He's Matt. I'm Sean. Brian was the missing musketeer. He'll be back next week, as will Tryhards. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you then.